Okay.
Okay.
Is there anything you want to ask or talk about?
The last time I wanted to ask the question, and I think I was late. I was watching Ian Clayton, one of the conferences, I mean the video, and he came in and he said that just briefly, and he said we 10%, we pay 10% in the Old Testament, and this is the new covenant that God owns everything. No, we give God 10% in the Old Testament, then in the new covenant we give God everything. So he said it briefly, and no one, I didn't quite get it. So I thought probably, someone will ask question and nobody asked question. But then later, I saw people during that conference, they just go randomly and put something in the offering box, and they keep going and going. I've never seen that before, so I don't know what that is all about. Then I've been reading about tithe because I've been a tither, for quite a long time. Then somebody or one ministry was talking about this 10% thing in the Old Testament that is a three set and is food. So, and it kind of getting confusion, and I've been wanting to ask, someone to just enlighten me about that. Here he comes. Yeah. So, that's what I've been, I've been wanting to ask. So if you can, just enlighten me and say something about that, so for clarification.
Sure. It's not very simple, but I'll give
I
it
know.
a go. I basically, in terms of kingdom finances, essentially the basic position that most sort of churches have held is sort of a tithe and an offering. Seeing as the tithe opens up the windows of heaven and offering releases sowing and reaping. I think, I know Ian Clayton, has challenged that position with a view that in the old covenant, the tithe system wasn't just simple as people say. So there was a tithe of 10%, then there was a second tithe and third tithe of a different percentage of that, which went into savings and went into the poor and went into celebrations. He also teaches about teruma, which is first fruits or heave offering. And in the early church and in the before Jesus's time as a rabbi, people gave teruma, which was they gave 2.5% or 40th to the rabbi who was their teacher as a teruma offering. So they were sowing into the revelation that they were receiving to support that revelation being released. And that's what you see when you see in some of Ian's conferences, they trade into his revelation. So they bring a token financially and trade into the revelation as a sign that they want to see the fruit of that revelation released into their lives. So that's the whole issue of sort of trading and exchange, really. So I'm exchanging something to receive something else in a covenant way. I've certainly been on a journey with the whole thing of kingdom finances for quite a while. And I've found personally, I mean, I've always given way more than 10% because I've always given whatever God's told me to give. And, he told me to give a lot more than 10%, so that's what I've done. And I never really thought much about it, but God challenged me to think about it from the perspective of in the new covenant, everything does belong to God. Yeah, we've given him our whole lives, so everything we own is God's. We're not our own anymore. We've been bought with a price, therefore everything belongs to God. And so in the New Testament, you see them talk about giving and gifts, and you do see that as proportional. There's a mention of it being proportional, but I believe that God would have us have an intimate relationship with him in such a way that we would be able to give whatever he asks us to give. I think the tithe is a basic fallback position for those who are not in that place of being willing to ask God, or if they did ask God, might be fearful of what he might ask them to do, therefore they don't ask. So from a position of immaturity, the tithe is a good thing, because it's, if it's done with the right heart. If it's done with the wrong heart, out of fear or out of the wrong motivation, then it's equally as wrong as anything else. But if it's given with a good heart, then I think God will honor it, but it's not the best thing. The best thing is a relationship with God where we seek him. And actually, if you think about it, it would be, well, how much should I keep rather than how much should I give? Because it all belongs to you anyway. How much do you want me to keep to be for my own use? You know. And but I think that's really not where most people are. And I think most people, if they were to genuinely ask God, what would you want me to give and where would you want me to give it, then I think they're fearful that the answer would be more than what the tithe would be, so they're prepared to give a tithe, but they're not really prepared to give any more, so they don't ask. And I think as we come to more maturity, we're realizing that everything we have is God's, and our whole provision comes from him anyway. Whatever source it comes from, it's God's provision for us. And so understanding kingdom finance from that perspective turns the whole thing around, and it means that we're all part of God's way of bringing the kingdom into established on the earth. And so it's a challenge. You know, I know a number of people are beginning to challenge it. You know, I know Jonathan Welton recently has written a blog post on it. You know, I know that giving was built into the fabric of creation. That's why the first fruits was given with Cain and Abel, and you know why Abraham gave before the law, essentially, but it was under a different understanding. You know, and we're now brought into a new covenant relationship with God. That old covenant is obsolete, and the way of thinking about finance needs to change to be engaged in kingdom finance. So we need to find ways of seeing administration of the government of God financially. The treasury room of heaven is open. Therefore, the resources for God, for everything he's called me to do, for my destiny, is available to me if I'm connected to him and I'm flowing out of the life of the kingdom. So, you know, I sort of like 2 Corinthians 9:8, you know, that God is able to make all grace, all his supernatural divine enabling, including financial grace and every other grace, available to me, that always having sufficiency, all sufficiency in everything, which doesn't leave anything out, I will also have an abundance for every good deed. So I will have enough to meet every need in my life and an abundance for every good deed that enables me to outwork the destiny that he's prepared for me. But that must come out of relationship. You know, I think so much of the financial thing has been reduced to a formula because we have to keep the church going. And the reality is, you know, for every minister who does work in that setting, then of course there are scriptures that talk about, you know, don't muzzle the ox and all that sort of stuff. The reality is God's our provider. God's my provider. You know, and I've sort of surprised some people to my attitude towards finances when I've done conferences and things. It's like, you know, I don't need an offering. If people would want to give an offering, that's great. If it blesses them to sow into what they want to sow into. But for me, God's my provider. So I don't demand a fee or an honorarium or any of those sorts of things, because God's my provider. And if God's asking me to go and minister somewhere, then he'll provide for me to do that one way or another. You know, so it is a totally different way of engaging in understanding the nature of the kingdom. You know, and God's provision, he wants to pour out, but he's going to pour it out on people who he can trust with it. You know, and to trust us with it, we have to honor him with everything and come to that place that it's all God's. I'm God's, everything I own is God's, my time is God's, everything is God's. And he entrusts me with my life and my time and my finances and everything else I've got to use it for his glory and for his honor and for his purposes. And so as we mature as sons of God, then that trust level will increase also, and the authority we have in that trust level will increase. But, you know, I remember reading years ago, you know, Charles Wesley or John Wesley, I think it was, says, you know, man has two conversions, you know, one for his soul and the other for his wallet, you know, because there's something about maintaining the control of finances which gives us security. And if we see it all as belonging to God, then there's a, that means I have to trust him for everything. Well, that goes totally in contrary to the pathway of the knowledge of good and evil, and is flowing out of the pathway of the resources of the tree of life, which is my provision for life, which is coming out of God and his kingdom. He is my provider. So I think, you know, we're on the horizon of a whole different way of understanding finances that will start to become more unveiled and released as we go forward. And I would encourage people to honor God from the position of faith that they're in right now, but to be open to for God's revelation to bring a different perspective on it. You know, and I know God's desire is that I will have an abundance of everything to fulfill my destiny. Now, for me, that might mean I may need this amount. For someone else, that may mean they need 10 times more than me. That's irrelevant. It's God's provision for me to fulfill my destiny and the provision for his people to fulfill their destiny of bringing transformation and restoration and dominion to the world. So when we're living under the kingdom government in cities of refuge, I don't think the financial systems will be operating like they are now. And therefore, whether there will be money or whether there will be an operation of exchange, if you look into the early church, you see that they had no needs, because those that had more enabled those that had less to function together. And I think that, again, will be a total challenge. Ooh, should we have one purse? And it would just fly in the face of independence and individualism, and it would be a huge challenge. And I'm not sure that most people are in a place of maturity yet to receive that challenge and to be honest about it. You know, because if there is fear involved in anything, then that is a hindrance to God releasing blessing. And so we've got to be open, I think, to see the revelation increase and progressive revelation increase. And, you know, I'm on a journey with that myself. You know, I am not wanting to get into a religious system, but I want to be in a relationship that allows me to give whatever God wants me to give and for him to supply whatever I need to be able to give whatever he's calling me to give, you know. And so my attitude has changed somewhat to it. I can't say that I've yet taught that in many places, because I'm still learning to engage it myself. And I'm learning to see what the mindsets are behind it that would hinder us seeing things from a new covenant perspective. But I know, you know, God's on the case with it. And so you find more and more people are beginning to release some revelation about it to challenge some of the preconceived ideas. Okay. Well, that's great to see.
Thank you.
That was excellent. Yeah. So, has anyone else got anything they want to share or ask? Feel free.
I've got a question, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
I'd like to just hear your thoughts on the differences about experiencing the kingdom of God in different realms. And particularly I'm thinking about the difference between stepping in to the realm of heaven,
yeah,
and the realm of heaven being within you as well.
Yeah.
There's times when I'm praying and I'm engaging and I can feel myself, as it were, moving up, the call to come up here. And there's times that you're in communion with God in your garden, and is that a place within your own heart, or is that a place in heaven? And then I suppose the third area is sometimes when you're praying and you just feel like your spirit man growing and expanding and extending out from you and covering an area or a piece of space. And so I've got these sort of three sort of dimensions of within and growing outwards and then stepping into something of another dimension. I just was wondering your thoughts on that and how that fits in with your understanding, really.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's really how I exactly see it. You know, there are ways of engaging God which cover those three aspects. And so, I mean, that's really the foundation for the pathways of relationship and the pathway of responsibility that we need to engage in. It needs to begin with the pathway of responsibility, that we engage with God in our own spirit and then see being joined to him in spirit, actually then begin to engage us in a way which draws that to flow through us to create an atmosphere of the kingdom around us. So it's like the kingdom of God is in us, it's within our spirit. And for me, that's a place where the door of first love is, where, you know, Jesus, Father, the realm of their rule, I've invited when I got born again for them to come in and live and dwell in me as a habitation of God, as I am a house, if you like. My spirit is a house of God, and therefore the kingdom is within my spirit as a realm where God rules. That is connected to heaven, and it's connected to his garden in heaven, where I can engage and have intimacy with him in his garden, the waterfalls, river of life, tree of life, throne of grace. That's a dimensional place where, because I open the first love gate, invite him to come and fill my spirit and engage with him personally and intimately within, he opens that realm for me to go back into that realm and engage with him there. And therefore, there's a complete overlap between his garden and my garden, my spirit, to start with. The desire is that it would flow into my soul and flow from my soul through my body to create the kingdom around me. So the kingdom within me should be manifested around me, and there are manifestations of the power of God that are associated with the rule of God, which is to bring change and transformation, and that comes through the sphere of government that I'm called to occupy, and that might be my workplace, my home, my family, wherever I am. I need to see the spirit, my spirit, joined to his spirit, 1 Corinthians 6:17, as I'm joined to the Lord, I become one spirit, bringing oneness with my soul as my soul yields and surrenders and in cooperation brings me into wholeness and peace and flows through me. So I am not just a house of God, I'm a gateway of heaven. So I'm a gateway for God's rule and his presence to manifest through me and around me. And so everything needs to flow out, not become stagnated in me. And all that really is about the relationship I have with God that is manifested in me and around me, and I can engage in those relational aspects of him being my source of supply, my knowing the Holy Spirit, knowing Jesus, knowing the Father intimately, and engaging in that relationship. Now, that relationship leads on to an intimacy of sonship, which carries with it responsibility. So the come up here and stepping into the realm of heaven is engaging the pathway of responsibility to take my position of government as a son, maybe operating in lordship or kingship, chancellorship, different levels of government, but learning to administer the kingdom from heaven so I can engage around the ark of the presence of God, find his will and purpose, get mandates, engage my mountains, engage the court system of heaven. And essentially that whole pathway is mapped out in Zechariah 3:6-7. I walk in his ways, here in this realm, manifesting the kingdom and the righteousness of God through my life, I then begin to administer his kingdom precepts in the realm of heaven. I then have charge of his house, charge of the courts, and have access to stand amongst those that are in his presence. And so there is a pathway of doing that. When I first engaged in intimacy in my own heart, it was through engaging my spirit, soul, and body in the pathways, the gateways of understanding who I was and how I functioned. So I cleansed the gateways of my life, dealt with my soul, so that I would have a flow, so that the river of life could flow through me, getting deeper and deeper, and therefore bringing life wherever it goes, according to Ezekiel 47. When I engaged in the realms of heaven and stepped in, I present myself as a living sacrifice to serve him, according to Romans 12, 1, 2. And so I learn to be transformed so that I can operate in the holiness of God and embrace intimacy within the different realms of heaven around his presence, and then I would begin to rule, knowing his will, be mandated to serve his purpose on a daily basis. And I do both on a daily basis. I open my first love gate, I engage with intimacy, I also step in, present myself as a living sacrifice, engage around his presence, step into him, and then flow out of that to administer the kingdom as he leads and as he directs me according to the mandate that I have. Now, I've developed those two pathways over a number of years, so they're very familiar with me, and I can engage in those pathways quickly, intimately. They're ingrained, stored within me, if you like, as memories of my engagements that then give me access as doorways to re-engage. So for me, those pathways are very familiar. I've trodden them down, and I can walk on them. So by thought, I can engage in anywhere I've been. That may be engaging in the dimension of my own soul, which is a sort of dimension or place, and therefore my heart is a reflection of that and needs to be brought into alignment with my spirit, with the river of life flowing it. Green pasture, me tending, cultivating it, planting in that in my garden, it's a reflection of my experiences in heaven. So many things that I've encountered in heaven are also in the garden of my own heart, but I have to tend and cultivate it. When I engage in the realms of the kingdom, then I'm looking to operate in a governmental role as a son, and therefore I've learned how to understand the different courts, how the court system function, how to administer righteousness and justice, because there is the foundation of the kingdom. Those three ways of seeing it are exactly how I would see it. You know, I am a house of God, I'm a mountain of God, and I'm a gateway of heaven. And therefore, that's who I am, and everything should be manifested on earth as it is in heaven through my life as I engage in relationship and intimacy. And from my identity in that intimacy with God, then I begin to do that which I am administered to do as my destiny is outworked from relationship, not for relationship. The key is I know God, I know who I am, and that allows me to do whatever he's called me to do. If I do or don't do anything, it doesn't actually affect who I am. And I have to get to that point, which took me quite a long time, to the point where it's not about what I do giving me identity, it's what I do coming from my identity and the intimacy I have in intimate relationship with him. But it takes time to develop that relationship, and it takes time to learn how to rule. And they're not instant things. They are a process and a pathway in which we go from stewardship ultimately to friendship and then lordship, kingship, sonship. And there are a few other governmental aspects that we might have on the way. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Anyone else got something? You usually got something, Jane. Come on.
So Sorry, my iPad keeps dropping out, so I keep losing all the picture. So I'm not quite sure what's going on.
We can see you.
Oh, okay. have I got any questions? I went down to Spirit School in Horsham on Saturday night and was listening to Justin, who preached amazingly on time. And he was talking about how harvest just doesn't mean souls. It means that there's a fullness coming in terms of maturity in the body of Christ. But there's also a fullness of evil rising up as well. And he was talking about that in the context of how the church needs to mature in that way. And I wanted to ask you, because he talked about, I mean, about 3 years ago, God spoke to me and said, I'm stretching time and space for you, because I was in a really stressed situation. And I've experienced time expanding and stretching to allow me to do the things and achieve the things that I need to do. But I just, Justin was talking about rich time and poor time and deep time, and I was just wondering if you had any revelation on that. I'm just, you know, wondering what you feel about it, because I know it's something that really resonates for me. And David will know, a friend of mine and I went to Greenwich with a team and did some prayer before the Olympics. And when, as we were listening to what Justin was saying, we began to get a handle on what God had actually done. And so I just wondered if you had any revelation on that God had given you. So,
Can I add a supplement question on the back of that for you two? One of the areas I've been praying into a lot this year, as I've seen, because my primary concern is praying in London, I don't know how to explain it really, but it links in, is there has been like an agreement between finance and time in London, and how the controlling finance gate has used time as its servant to extend itself. And I've been praying to the whole notion of the futures market and how that's all been generated and how that sort of works within the corporate financial world coming out of London. So just hearing Jane, and on the back of that, if you've got any thoughts on how time can be used badly as well, I'd really appreciate it, because that's something I'm praying to.
Okay. All right. Okay. in terms of time, we obviously live linearly in this dimension. Eternity is where there is no time and it's all now. And the created realms of the realms of heaven are in between. And so they operate at a faster speed of light, so that they're all before what happens here, but they're not eternity. And so there is this dimensional engagement with it, that you can step into the realm of heaven and there is this lengthening and expanding. For instance, I mean, I've been there and it seemed like, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes of this time when I came back, but there it seemed like I was there for hours and hours and hours, and the revelation that I received, you know, indicated that, and the experiences I had, but, you know, the time here was different. But there was still some passage of time. Whereas when you seem to engage with eternity, there is no passage of time. It is all now. And therefore, God, when I was created in eternity, before the foundation of the world, then I have access back into what was then and is always then and now and what will be. I mean, it's like it's hard for us to engage the understanding of it. But eternity, where who God is and the expression of where that eternal realm is, it's all now. And therefore, nothing can ever take God by surprise. We can never do anything which is a shock, because it's all now to him from that perspective. But he has created time and space, and he has created a spiritual realm that operates and links the two, if you like, together. And that's where we're exploring those realms. So I've been back into eternity, and I've been back into his heart, and it's so hard to describe what it feels like. Everything seems to be in reality there. I mean, it's different, let's say. Now, if we are to administer that realm of the kingdom, and if we're to administer that realm and how that realm functions, then we need to understand how God can use us. So there is the whole issue, I understand, of different time and the fullness of time and all those things. But my personal way of seeing it is God can shorten time for us here in this realm, which is why people can be trans-relocated and shifted 1,000 miles, you know, instantly, or their journey time can be cut down. When they thought it was going to take 4 hours, it took an hour. That is a shortening of time to enable us to do more things. There's also a lengthening of time in that, seemingly, and I've experienced this myself, I've been able to do more things in a shorter period of time than I could have possibly thought I could have done. So something that would have taken me several days can take me several hours. Now, I don't know how that functions other than it just does, and I'm able to do it. And I'm not aware necessarily that time is slowed, but it seems that that's what happens, you know, and I can't explain it any other way, because I look at, well, this used to take me this long, and I'm doing it, and it doesn't take me that longer anymore. So it appears that way. You know, I personally have had one occasion where I was trans-relocated, and, you know, and it saved me some time because I was late to something. So that's a personal experience. I also know that people have been used in time. So that if you think, and there's several connections with this, and I've had several discussions with people who've experienced some of these things personally, so this is sort of talking to people who've directly encountered this stuff. I know three people who stepped into heaven together to seek God, and God took them, all of them, in a vision, or was it more than a vision? I think it is, to the year 1800 in the States, in a place called Oklahoma. And they were in a came to a house, and in that house there was a young girl, I think, who was sick. And they ministered to her, she was healed, and the parents were, you know, thankful and praising God as a result of the healing. And they stepped back together, and they sort of questioned each other, almost like very sheepishly thinking, did you see the same thing I saw? And they all saw the same thing, and they were all in the same encounter. And I believe that's where they make themselves available to God, and God is able to answer a prayer from 1800, because it's all now to him in that sense, and take us to that point to answer the prayer. Did it change time? No, because we were always used, they were always used in 1800. They were just transported from here to there to outwork and answer the prayer that the parents obviously made for their child. They were available, God used them. Just like, you know, in the past, we've go to prayer and God inspires us to pray in tongues for somebody, and then all of a sudden you find that that precise moment that someone had this particular issue, and then later on you found out that you prayed at that particular time. This is just actually taking it one step beyond that, that he can move us in time and space spiritually, because their bodies didn't go, but their spirits manifested their bodies and they were seen. We've had that twice in our physical meetings here recently, where someone has been worshiping and God has taken them in the spirit. Their body still remained, but their spirit went to minister into another part of the world. They weren't aware whether it was a different time, but it was definitely a different space. And they were seen, and they ministered, and then they came back into their space and time here. Another lady that I talked to, she was praying, was engaging in heaven, and she found herself in Pearl Harbor, and found herself in a gun emplacement with this guy crying out because he'd run out of ammo, and she actually saw a stream of ammunition flowing out of her body, and enabling him to defend the position. And she was just like blown away. What? How could that have happened? Well, because again, God was able to take her and use her. And you think, okay, it didn't change what happened, but it had always happened that way for that person. And God used them in this time to engage in that one. I was talking to another guy the other day who sort of threw into the mix another idea of how this could work. And he said, well, have you ever thought about encouraging yourself in the Lord? And I thought, yeah, I've used that scripture and I've used that thing. Yeah, I can encourage myself. Well, if you engage in the realms of heaven before, what about encouraging yourself in the past? Because if your prayers, if you can answer the prayer that you made in the past for God's strength, God's help, God's support, God's anointing, God's power, what if he would to use you to go and support yourself in the past? Oh, well, that's a really interesting way of encouraging myself. But all these things are just opening up, you know, a deeper understanding of, you know, the timeline. I mean, I personally have been taken back and shown things in time. So I've been back, you know, I went back to the point of creation and saw creation being birthed. I went back to talk to Adam and Eve in their time. Not just engage them in heaven, but I went back to their time. I went back to when the pyramid at Giza was built. Because I always had a sort of, I wanted to know how it was done, and God took me back and showed me. You know, so I've engaged the timeline for some of it for information, some of it that's brought revelation. But I know that, you know, someone like Gary Beaton, I think, has gone back into the past and seen something, and then it enabled him to minister into that situation to stop the effect of it going forward. Now again, God used him in that situation. He didn't change the past, but he was able to stop what was intended taking place in the future because he was able to intercede and stand administratively in government to stop that taking place. He took responsibility of what had happened and changed it. From being there in that time. So, you know, there's a whole load of that stuff. Would the enemy try and twist that, use that, you know, adapt a system that depended on time financially? Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, God's system of finance is very different to what the enemy would seek to get us into. And so the whole system of finance having no base in anything, which is what essentially most financial systems have right now. There's no gold standard, there's no silver standard. Actually, what is a pound? You know, some of those questions are being asked and some of them are being challenged in the courts right now, because I think the whole financial system and the mountain of government is going to be shaken severely, and it had several tremors that have taken place up till now. So that we will need to learn a different economic system when we begin to operate in the kingdom. You know, so I think, you know, there's a whole their understanding of how this stuff, and it sounds really bizarre and really weird for most people, but when you step into those realms, you begin to see the possibilities because things are different. You know, and the more we pursue our kingdom function and our kingdom roles in these things, the more we'll find that these things will be outworked and God's kingdom will manifest in ways beyond our imaginational thinking. I mean, it's just like, you know, go back 10, 20 years and these would have been like, what are you talking about? This is just bizarre stuff. But actually, God is releasing the revelation of how the kingdom realm works, our understanding of quantum mechanics and how observation and can change how things function, how consciousness can change and creatively alter things. All those things are, I think, part of what we're doing in learning how these governmental things work. You know, and understanding how these things function. And they do sound bizarre. I mean, I remember some reading a book on quantum physics, and someone says, if it's not really weird, then it's not quantum. You know, and it just like that. I mean, you know, it sounds really weird how entanglement works, why one molecule can be affected when it's millions of miles apart. Well, it can because we're connected in a realm which operates before, you know. And I think the more mature we get, the more God, I believe, will give us some of the keys of understanding. I think the whole understanding of Metatron and Metatron being the timekeeper and the doorkeeper will have a significance, because I believe that's where the lengthening and shortening of time and accessing through doors that have keys to times and seasons. If that sort of gives some answer. I mean, I can't say I understand everything or have revelation of anything, but I would encourage you, if you feel that God is calling you to look into some of these areas, okay, so the financial issue, it's like, okay, how do we administer that from a kingdom perspective is the key. It's like, do we begin to bring the government of God into those situations? Do we unveil or administer court proceedings to stop some of those things, change some of those things, administer those things differently, expose some of those things, bring them into the light, see them change and transform? I think if you're in a sense, destiny is leading you in that direction, you're called to administer the government of God financially, then you'll get the revelation that enables you to be able to say, well, what do I do with this revelation? What do I do with this information? How do I administer it from righteousness and justice? And you will be given mandates that give you the direction of what to do to enable you to be able to outwork that. You know, it's like, it's, I know it's not my, according to my mandate and my scroll. I know other people it is, and I connect with them, and we talk about some of these kingdom finance issues. But I do know it's an administrative function that God would want us to begin to engage in. So keep pursuing it, but look for the kingdom solutions and the judicial processes that you need to function in it, not just information. Because we can understand something, but we have to see it from the perspective of heaven, and therefore brings heaven's perspective into it. Therefore, wisdom is really, really important. If we're going to bring government from that righteousness and justice perspective, then we need to learn how to engage wisdom so that what we see and what we have revelation of will enable us to begin to bring God's government into it. All right. Okay. Okay. Oh, hang on. Let's unmute this a minute.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry. Did you hear what I asked?
No, I didn't quite catch it. Yeah.
Sorry. I asked if you could say a little bit about Metatron.
Okay. Right.
Oh, just, you know.
Yeah.
What's involved? What?
Yeah.
Well, yes, go on, just say what you
Metatron is, from my perspective, and I know the teaching that Ian brings onto it, is the keykeeper and timekeeper in the realms of heaven, engages on a golden mountain in the garden of God, the Father's garden in Eden, and is the chief of the order of chaos, the living creatures. And has a key role to play. And God spoke to me about this year, Metatron being a key role to play. Now, there are things, geometric shapes and symbols, that seem to be connected with Metatron. And there are something called sacred geometry that is a thing where different shapes have a governing of how things were made and created and put together. And there's something called Metatron's cube, which is a cube but also a multi-dimensional expression of the government of God, and has spheres of government attached to it. And you can do a Google of Metatron's cube, and you'll come up with many actual perspectives, things. I mean, I do have a whole load of the diagrams that show it. I can give you an example of it by hopefully cutting to it. Yeah. Okay. So there's sort of a sort of breakdown of the different spheres, but when they come together in dimensional diagrams, they look like you're looking into and seeing different dimensional shapes. And if someone described it as almost like this is the DNA of the spirit, this is how God has ordered and created everything. And so it's associated with Fibonacci number sequences, the golden mean, phi, and how everything is sequenced and fractal after heaven. Now, I don't usually get into all this stuff because I find it, well, it sounds a bit odd, and you know, and I know a whole lot of New Agey stuff is connected to it, and you look at it and think, well, this is all a bit weird. But we were engaging governmentally here in our leadership, and about five of us all saw the same type of figures geometrically from different perspectives, and we all came out of the encounter sort of looking a bit like, oh, am I going to share this? All of us drew something as an expression of it. So we were like, okay, this is really interesting. Why are we seeing this thing? What is this about? And you sort of get things like this dimensional type pictures where there are sort of spheres and different representations of those shapes. And this was some of what we were seeing. And then there are different governmental spheres that enable you to look into this. And it's how the kingdom functions at a subatomic level and everything else. Because, interestingly enough, there's someone posted a Facebook thing of a lecture someone did on TED about weak, strong forces of how creation is held together. And again, they produced a geometric shape of eight dimensionals of different forces at a molecular level and a submolecular level, subatomic level, which have the same pattern. This guy wasn't a Christian. He was a quantum physicist. But he was showing diagrams that look very similar to that which I've just sort of shared there. But you get other diagrams like the Star of David shape, which is an overlap of two triangles coming together that form a governmental pyramidal shape. And personally, this is the one that I've engaged with the most, which is a sapphire cube. And the tablets of stone, which Moses received when he went into the realms of heaven onto the sapphire pavement with the next to the sapphire throne, which we have assumed would be flat tablets with some writing on it, which is what eventually Moses produced, God gave him a sapphire sphere, a sapphire cube. That's what the tablets were, and they contained revelation of how the kingdom functioned. They contained revelation of heavenly trading and how to engage heaven and manifest it on earth. And I've been in that cube. God, in an encounter, I found myself in the midst of a sapphire, well, cube. It was such a strange thing, but they were like representation of, if I can express it as the manifold wisdom and manifold grace of God, multifaceted, multicolors of expressions of the nature of God and his precepts of how he founded and forms everything. Now, you know, it sounds really weird and it sounds really odd and it sounds a bit mystical, but I believe that God is revealing the nature of this and what it means in our day so that we will understand it and be able to come from the revelation that God intends mankind to have, so that we can begin to function as he does in creative power and with the creative ability to release government. So, you know, I have engaged Metatron a few times. He took me to engage Metatron in it. Been there somewhat overwhelmed most times, but I know the revelation of the 12 chancellors' houses and the 12 lords of Zion are connected with these governmental spheres, which are multiples of 3, 4, 7, 12. It's odd. You know, I have to, you know, agree it's odd. And it's like I wouldn't be in this stuff if God hadn't have really took me into it to engage it. I have subsequently encountered and met people who also have seen these things, shared with me some diagrams that they saw, and I'm saying, well, that's exactly the same things that I'm seeing, others are seeing, God is up to something. And so it's really a foundational understanding of how he creates and how he holds things together, and how we're supposed to engage with that. And I think Metatron as an angel has a role to play in our understanding the seasons and the time and the keys of unlocking these mysteries. It's like the mysteries that have been hidden in darkness are now being brought into the light. And there are glimpses of these things that are sort of out there as almost like myths that actually have a foundation in truth, and God is actually bringing the light to shine on those things so that we can understand and function in them. That's really sort of where I am with it. I have had some encounters that I can't really sort of describe as yet, but they are about these building blocks and how does God does things as the foundations and precepts that we can build on, that he is bringing to release revelation of. I mean, it is a bit fascinating. It's quite interesting. You know, there are some things you can see of how these things are drawn and put together, particularly in the sort of that type of thing or that type of thing, when it's, you know, these pictures of these cubes and multi-dimensions within the cubes and the spheres of government they seem to be intersecting with. But yeah, I sort of haven't got anything more I can really say. But it's one of those things, if you're drawn towards it or if God gives you the revelation, continue to engage in wisdom with it and continue to engage with him in a way which will bring you into the revelation that's for you. You know, I mean, my wife found herself engaged with the cube, the sapphire cube, and it was spinning and she doesn't sort of normally engage that sort of stuff. So I know she also was engaged with one of the ancient ones at the same time, one of these hooded cloak figures. So I'm thinking, okay, if my wife is engaging with this stuff, God is up to something, because that's not her normal engagements. So I was thinking, okay, there's something going on here that we need to be open to and aware of and be willing to pursue if we're called to. You may think, that's all over the top of my head, I'm not really interested, not really bothered, great, just leave it. You know, only pursue that which the desires of your heart draw you towards as God brings you the revelation of it so that it can be released. So, okay.
Mike, may I ask a question?
A quick one, because I've really got to go, but soon.
I just wondered, are we still at base camp or have we moved forward? Sorry, I'm very croaky and everything today.
Yeah, sure.
Because everything we've talked about seems to be outside of my understanding and experience. And I just wondered if we've moved forward and I'm not caught up yet or something.
Well, this is really this isn't really an alpha group meeting. So this really is just for people to ask questions about whatever. The Alpha group is at base camp stage, and the mentoring groups there are looking to engage some of these things so that we can move forward. So don't worry about it. If all this stuff is just over the top of your head, that's okay. You know, but I make these times available to answer anything that people ask. You know, the base camp stuff is more about the basics of the relationships that we need to develop with God to enable us to come into sonship. And so they're much more basic personal intimacy and development of those things, but ultimately they will lead us to a sonship, which will mean that we need to understand how the kingdom works and the protocols of government and the kingdom and how God does what he does, and some of these things relate to that, and some of these things will be uses of energy sources and different things in the future when we begin to operate in cities of refuge. And there are always going to be forerunners of those things that have glimpses of things that then pursue them, and then other people eventually follow to the degree that they need to, and not everyone needs to follow at the same degree. So if it's all a bit mystical, don't worry.
I'm not worried, I'm just thinking. Yeah. Will we be going on to an alpha group next?
The UK alpha group met last week, and another one's meeting this week. So you should have had notification of all that in terms of what group you're in, what time it meets. It's this meeting on a Tuesday night at 7:30 every month. So have a check to make sure you haven't missed the invitation. I'll have a look to see.
I might have missed it. Right, thanks, Mike.
No problem.